welcome to Hazel and Katniss and Harry and Star, a young adult literature podcast, their film and television adaptations, and everything in between. I'm Joe.
And I'm Brenna.
And our show is located on the ancestral lands of the Haudenosaunee, the Huron-Wendat, and the Anishinaabe on lands connected to the Toronto Purchase, Treaty 13 of 1805.
And on the Tecumloops-Tay-Sequepem territory within the unceded traditional lands of Sequepem Ulu. And today's text, The Catalogue of the Universe by Margaret Mahey, is set in New Zealand. And Joe, they're not clear about what town it's set in, so I used Dry Creek Road as like my geographical like point.
Okay.
And so I believe that this book is set in the traditional territory of the Ngāti Kahununu peoples. And they're Maori people, obviously.
Yes.
I'm going to be getting a lot of practice with pronunciation this month. These are new to me, so please feel free to write in and correct me if I'm really screwing it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so folks, we are kicking off the first of 4 weeks of texts either set in or created by New Zealand folks. And yeah, Brenna, I think this is probably going to be all new language for you in terms of land acknowledgements.
Yeah, totally. And also, you know, when we did our Australia week, month. I tried really hard to get better at territorial acknowledgements in the sort of style that is typically used in those territories. And so I'm also going to work on that. So you might see it like move around a bit as we work on this. But yeah, Joe, I don't know what to say about this book. And I sort of cued you before we started recording that I'm a bit like, meh, because I liked it.
Right.
But I also, it's a pretty sort of straightforward coming of age love story, and I kept expecting ghosts to pop out, and I don't really know why.
Well, partially I think it's because the last time we covered Margaret Mahey, we were talking about the changeover, which does have a lot of supernatural elements to it. And you're not alone, Brenna. When I was looking up Goodread reviews, when I was looking up Amazon reviews, there were a number of folks who went into this expecting either something celestial or supernatural to it. And there's definitely science and astronomy and philosophy. But yeah, you're right. At the heart of it, I'm going to quibble because I do see a bunch of people say, yeah, this is a contemporary YA romance. And I just don't care about the romance. Like, I'm really much more interested in the family dynamics in this story.
That's why I think it's better framed as a fairly traditional coming of age story.
Okay.
But yeah, let's jump into the plot and then we can sort of bring people in. So
yeah, because this is not the easiest text to find. So folks, there is a link in the show notes if you need to find the book. It's on the Internet Archive, but this is an older one, so it's not as readily accessible as some of the other texts we've covered.
Yeah, so this book was published in 1985. And I think it's worth noting for our non-New Zealand listeners who probably aren't aware, like, Margaret Mahey is a big deal, y'all.
Huge. It's the reason I picked this to go off the top, not only because it's the oldest or the second oldest of the titles we're going to cover, but because she's a freaking legend.
Yeah. She has like more than 150 published books. And like, yes, a lot of them are picture books for children, but she's also written 40 novels and 20 collections of short stories. Like, this lady can produce, well, could produce. She has passed away.
Yes.
But I think it's really important that listeners know that because I don't think it's particularly well known. Maybe, I'm not sure, like, I don't want to speak for like Australia and the UK, other English-speaking nations, but I will say that like, this is not a name that is big in North American children's literature, and it probably should be.
Honestly, I mean, we're going to talk about it. This is not the easiest text to get into. I think the way that Mahey writes is quite challenging for young adult readers, but there's something to be said about, how prolific she is, the way that she doesn't talk down to her audience either. Like, she expects you to struggle. Even me as an adult, I found there were passages where I just thought, I'm not sure I've got it, but I'm enjoying it, question mark, maybe.
And the other thing I want to say before we start is that this book won the 2005 Phoenix Award from the Children's Literature Association. Joe, do you know about this award? You will like it if you don't know about it.
I do not know, so tell me everything.
Okay, so the Phoenix Award is obviously named after the mythical bird, the phoenix that rises from the ashes. It is awarded to the best English language children's book that did not win a single major award when it was originally published.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering why it won something 20 years after publication.
Yeah, the gap has to be 20 years. So it's
Oh, they were just waiting.
Yeah, it's an award that looks back in time and says like, hey, everybody, we missed this.
we done F up.
Yeah. And I kind of love that because something we talk a lot about on the show is how, you know, young adult literature goes through trends and books get lost. And so the idea that there's like there's a part of the Children's Literature Association that like makes note of that, I really love.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. So the plot. We have effectively two main characters. We have Angela and we have Tycho. Angela is raised by a single mom who's a little bit eccentric.
She's kooky.
I kind of get like aging hippie vibes from Dido, the mom. They live at the edge of town in this house that doesn't even really have plumbing.
No.
And they're just kind of making do. And Angela has a lot of questions about who her father is. So that's like character one, family one.
Right.
And then we have Tycho. And Tycho almost is living like the opposite life, not in terms of class, but in terms of sort of family situation. He has too much family.
Yeah.
So he's got a mom and a dad. His dad has recently sort of found himself in a difficult situation. He has epilepsy and he's not able to work or drive. And so he's kind of in this like period of not really knowing who he is. Mm-hmm. And a mom who's trying to overcompensate for all of that. An older
Mrs. Potter.
Kind of love her. We have an older brother, who Richard, who should probably have moved out by now, but like isn't big on the whole having a job thing.
But also the snappiest of characters.
He is great.
I kind of loved Richard.
And then we have Africa, who is Tycho's older sister, who is perpetually about to move home with her small child because her marriage is on the brink of collapse. And so, you know, Tycho tends to escape to the silence of Angela's house, and Angela tends to escape to the bustle of Tycho's house. And Angela's mom loves Tycho. Tycho's mom does not love Angela.
Well, and okay, so here's the interesting thing, especially knowing that this book is written in 1985. The representation of Angela and her sexuality and how she gets treated is kind of wild. Like, yeah. She's actually very sex positive. You know, she has a tendency to dress liberally.
She likes a short short. She likes a see-through top.
Yeah, which I think is one of the reasons why Mrs. Potter doesn't like her very much. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a bit of a bad influence. She has a quote-unquote reputation. So everyone assumes because of the way she dresses, the way she flirts, the way she is just very competent that, well, she must be sleeping with all of the boys. And of course, it's revealed throughout the text. She's not. No, she's a virgin. And part of me almost doesn't like that because I would have rather Angela just be that girl as opposed to, ooh, you misjudged her and she's actually a good girl. Like there's still that in the 1985-ness. But I actually really liked how Angela is represented as this just really strong, empowered female. Like the areas where she is troubled or she is uncertain is very much about, ooh, do people judge me because I don't have a dad? Like she doesn't care about the lack of money. She doesn't care about the single mom. She doesn't care about being considered loose and all of this stuff. And I really like that.
Yeah, I did too. I liked also the dynamic between the families. Like at least part of what Mrs. Potter doesn't like about Angela is that Angela is actually a more chaste version of Africa, right? Like, and Africa had been wild in her youth, and it's almost like Mrs. Potter doesn't like seeing the same sort of archetype coming back into the family because she only has space in her brain for Africa. So I kind of like that dynamic as well.
Yeah, and she also can't treat Africa that way because that's her daughter, whereas she can treat Angela this way because she doesn't need to be kind.
Yeah, exactly. And so basically, we're set up through the blurb on the back of the book, through a lot of the reviews of the book, to think that the central plot line is the fact that Tycho is obviously in love with Angela, and Angela is slowly figuring out she's in love with Tycho. And that is happening, but by far the bulk of the book is about Angela figuring out who her father is, going to confront him, mm-hmm. finding out some secret family information, being furious with Dido, and then having to repair her relationship with Dido. Like, that's yes. actually what the book is about.
mm-hmm. And then we get this kind of end of book reveal where, yes, Angela discovers, oh, you know what? Even though Tycho is ugly and short, he is my person because he's super smart and we feel at ease together and everything kind of magically works out except for the guy who gets his leg amputated in a car accident that we think is actually Dido plunging off a cliff. It's wild.
It is wild. I did not know what to make of that big set piece ending.
It's so out of left field. Like, it isn't, because we talk about the twisty, turny, winding all road the throughout the whole book. And you're like, well, somebody's obviously going off that edge. I really did think we were going to kill Dido. And I was worried.
Too. Yeah, me too. So basically what happens is when Angela confronts Roland, her father, she finds mm-hmm. out a bunch of things. So Dido has always told her that her father has been providing her with money to keep right. them afloat and pay their mortgage. And so Angela has this sense that, like, this guy out there does care about her. Like, he can't mm-hmm. – Dido says he has a wife and he has three daughters and he can't leave them, but he does make sure we're okay. So right. all of that is BS. He is not yep. married. He does not have children and he hasn't mm-mm. given Dido one red cent.
And he, like, has not even thought about no. them this whole time. It really seems like it was a one-night affair that Dido was just, oh, I was trying to protect you because I didn't want you to grow up thinking that nobody cared about you except me. Except, of course, what it has done has turned into this epic love affair in Angela's mind.
Yeah.
And then she gets so mad at Dido when the truth comes out.
Yeah, because the other piece of information we learn is that the grandmother, who by total coincidence, well, not total coincidence, but without Dido knowing, is also named Angela, first yep. of all. She actually gave Dido money to have an abortion. Yeah. So, like, I mean, there's just a lot.
And Dido's like, and I just took the money and bought us this house instead, and I had you.
Yeah, you great. Did. Dido for the win. So anyway, yes, she has this huge, like, blow-up confrontation with her mother on the phone in a phone booth outside of Roland's office, which is where the confrontation had taken place. And she basically says, like, I wish you were dead. Mm-hmm. And then she has this night with Tycho. And then when they're walking back to Angela's house, they see a car go over the edge. And of course, we assume it's Dido. Mm-hmm. But it's not. It's just two guys.
It's not. Yeah. It's just like the two imbeciles who live down the hill from them who are always getting up into hijinks. And it's sort of weird because even as we're talking about this, it sounds like there's a ton going on in this book.
It's not.
It's about 200 pages long and most of it is philosophical, celestial conversations between Angela and Tycho. Like, this is bare bones. Mm-hmm. And yet it simultaneously feels like there's a ton happening.
And honestly, Joe, right up until the end of the book, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, Dido's in the car crash and we're going to get ghost Dido at the end. Like, I was still so sure.
That is too funny. Too funny.
There's something about it that does feel like kind of ethereal and otherworldly. And, mm-hmm. you know, you were saying off the top, it's not an easy book to get into. We both struggled to get into it.
Yeah.
Some of that is like, spoiler alert, friends, reading things on the Internet Archive is not the easiest thing in the world.
No.
It's a bit of a struggle sometimes. But also, yeah, the language is a bit weird. But also there is this kind of like ethereal vibe. Mm-hmm. And yeah. like the cover is also really weird. Like, I don't know what edition you had, Joe, because there were three different versions on the Internet Archive. But the one that I had like a picture of redheaded mm-hmm. Angela on the cover. And then I guess it's Tycho standing behind her.
Yeah.
But he's so blonde and like this mm-hmm. like light is radiating out of this book he's reading yeah. that he does in fact look like a ghost. I'm sorry, he looks like a ghost.
Yeah, I can't help but think that part of it is Mayhee's reputation yeah. because she does tend to dip into some of that subject matter. And then, yeah, the misleading cover art, which was another thing that a lot of reviews focused on.
It's such 80s cover art. Like, oh my God.
The most 80s cover art. Loved it. But then, yeah, when you get into it, you know, we spend a bunch of time between Tycho and Angela talking about, you know, the Catalog of the Universe, which is a book that she has given Tycho, which he is fond of reading through and then taking out his favorite quotations and putting them above his bed so that he sees them first thing in the morning. We learn that they met when they were 5 years old on a lunar eclipse. So everything that's happening seems to be written in the stars.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the book, you realize that it's all meant to be representative of a love affair for the ages, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's cosmic in mm-hmm. some ways. But when you first start the book, that's not really what you think is going on. So in some ways, it's both grander and also quite a bit smaller and more contained than you realize.
Okay, let's talk about how we didn't care about the romance, because I think that's really interesting. Is part of it just we've been there, done that with the best friend who's secretly in love, blah, 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 so many times?
Well, and the girl that's beyond attractive, the geeky boy who loves her, and they can't come together, but then they realize they're perfect for one another. Yeah, it's very tropey.
Whereas the absent father is also tropey, but it's much more compelling of a story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting how even in 1985, we felt like the marketing had to always be about the romance first and foremost, right? Like, I'm quite mm-hmm. fascinated by that, because this is before, you know, the love triangle became the key trope. And like,
right.
It's before a lot of that. So you would have thought there was like more freedom to sell a book as something other than a romance. But like,
mm-hmm.
it's weird. There is a level at which the romance actually feels tacked on.
100%. That was my complaint, is that it doesn't feel genuine or authentic. I don't actually buy that these two like each other so much as they just enjoy spending all of their free time together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. And maybe it's because we spend so much time in Tycho's head, but I also don't mm-hmm. really buy that he has as little to offer as everybody seems to think in the world around him. Like, I get that he's a dork and he doesn't have a lot of friends, but like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just, they have to keep reminding us how ugly he is, because I just kept losing track of the fact that he was supposed to be this like gremlin of a human, because mm-hmm. he doesn't come across as anything other than quite lovely otherwise.
Well, yeah. And that was the other really fascinating part about reading so many of these reviews, is some people feel that Angela is totally vacuous and facile. They don't enjoy her chapters at all. We should note that we're alternating between mm-hmm. the two of them. So we do have that dual protagonist, but you're not stuck in either one's head for too long. But yeah, Tycho has some really serious self-esteem issues. I think part of this is that he's the youngest of three children. His parents only care about Africa. Yes. We are obsessed with Africa.
Even though she seems terrible, she seems so terrible.
I don't think she's terrible so much as she is the princess. She's the yeah. one who's used to being taken care of, and her parents dawdle on everything. But, you know, Richard is so adjusted to it that he's almost swung the opposite way, where he's just like, I don't want to be involved in any of this. And then that leaves Tycho, who's young, who's inexperienced, who doesn't have a great image of himself. And all of this to me is so interesting. Mm-hmm. All of the family scenes, mm-hmm. you know, even reading about how the cat gets up onto everything. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much richness in the family dynamics in both sides of the Agreed. Story. I just could not muster any enthusiasm for the romance, because that, to me, felt like the part that Mayhee herself wasn't even interested in.
Yeah, I agree. These families are really rich and interesting. And mm-hmm. there's a class dynamic happening here that I find really interesting. And I love the contrast. Like, in reality, although Angela is popular, she feels as alienated from the people at school as mm-hmm. Tycho does. And
yeah.
and all of that is so much more interesting than whether Tycho and Angela are going to do it. They do, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, which, again, does feel sort of slightly progressive. You yeah. know, you think that we're going to get some kissing by the end of the book, and instead it's, oh, Angela maybe went out and kind of prosted herself in a drunken state, but then ran away, and she shows up all dirty and disheveled at Tycho's house when the rest of his family is off taking care of Africa, and we just get down to effing.
Yeah, yeah, we really do. I do love that she protects herself from an attempted essay by barfing on the dude. Kind of loved that.
Yeah, I don't understand people's criticisms that Angela feels either underwritten or that she's too tropey. I thought that Angela was a very compelling character.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel quite the same about Tycho, but I gathered that people did, because there's a bunch of folks online who are saying, you know, this is best boyfriend material, the fact that he's not good looking but has this amazing personality, so winsome, all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. It's weird to me how polarizing people find, like, oh, I don't care about the families. All of that is just wasted stuff. I'm here for the romance. What? Like, oh, I don't like Angela. She's a bit of a slut. She's one dimensional. What? Just.
It's weird, too, that the reviews that are very pro the romance are often the ones that are the most anti-Angela, which also is like, if you like Tycho that much, why do you want him to end up with Angela if you don't like her? I don't understand what's happening in your brain.
Also, you don't like Angela, but you're here for the romance. I don't know. I feel like you're telling on yourself.
Yeah.
That feels like a much more contemporary perspective, where we read Twilight.
Yeah.
And now we're looking at it through this lens.
Good point. Yeah, absolutely. By the way, this is a much more compelling protagonist than anything that happens in Twilight.
These characters have agency.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, I guess one of the other struggles I had is as we've talked about numerous times, I'm pretty plot driven. And as we recognize, this is pretty scant. And combined with the way that Mahey writes, which is so philosophical at times, it's quite adult.
Yeah.
She doesn't seem to care too much about whether or not you're hanging on every word. Like, she's telling the story she wants to tell. And that's fascinating, but also I think sometimes it does hold me at a distance as a reader.
It's interesting because, you know, we've talked before about where YA literature intersects with literary fiction and how so often we end up in literary fiction when we lose the focalization through the young person. So, you know, thinking about books we've read like Virgin Suicides. But here we have a very strong teenage focalization. Like, this never lapses into nostalgia or sentimentality. It's always from the immediate perspective of these protagonists, but it is highly literary. I could see this book being assigned. Like, this is a really great sort of school book for exploring, like, characterization, voice, not plot. Which is interesting because we haven't read a lot like that. Like, this to me feels like very much a moment of YA that we don't live in anymore. And I liked visiting it, but it did take me a long time to dig in.
Yeah, you really got to get on Mahey's wavelength. But I'm fascinated that you say that, because I've gathered, you know, it's not easy to find a ton of information about this. Even reviews are relatively scant, which is another interesting thing considering the book is old, but it's not that old. But yeah, I gathered that this is a pretty seminal New Zealand text, and I do think it gets assigned in classes. So I'd be very curious to hear from New Zealand listeners, or maybe even Australian listeners, if there's overlap or something. Was that the case? Are there New Zealand qualities that we may not be aware of? Because this didn't strike me as a particularly New Zealand text. But then apart from that, yeah, I was reading it and thinking, is this the New Zealand equivalent of Anne of Green Gables or To Kill a Mockingbird, where it has that almost literary-ness to it, where the educational value is partially in just adapting to the writing style?
That's a really good question. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I see it now that you're saying it.
I don't know. Are there other interesting things about the book that caught your attention, Brenna?
No, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean there's not a sense of, like, you know, heavy symbolism or overarching themes or anything like that. Like, I think we've touched on what is the most interesting, which is this unique, well, these two unique family dynamics and the ways these characters interact with their families. I wish more stories had fascinating families. We always love them when we come across them.
Truly. Yes, we love a good parent, but also just this feels, I think, the juxtaposition between Angela and her mom, like that sort of very simple, they're almost equivalents. Like, you get the impression Angela takes care of Dido almost as much as Dido takes care of her.
Yeah.
And that's not the case with Tycho. And I really enjoy the juxtaposition of those two familial relationships. That to me was just, it was fascinating and it was fun. It was really exciting to read, even the reactions that Richard has to Tycho and how his mom is like a gentle martyr where she wants everybody to be happy, but she puts it all on herself. Just these really fascinating, involving character traits that feel like even though these characters maybe don't have a huge contribution to make to the plot, they're not central to the romance, they're not really moving the story along, all the time I'm spending with these characters, I just want more.
Yeah, I totally agree. 100%. Yeah, I'm glad we read it, Joe. I really struggled with prep for this week because I didn't really know what we were going to talk about. But that doesn't mean I'm not delighted to have been in this world for a few hours.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm a convert to Mahy. You know, this, as we said numerous times, was a bit of a struggle. Mm-hmm. But the two times now that we've had the opportunity to talk about her work on the pod, I think I can understand why this woman was a very important author, but specifically for young adults in the time, because I think that this is just doing it in a way that we either don't see very often in North America specifically, or maybe we're just not seeing it all with contemporary YA.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree completely. You want to play bingo?
Should we try?
Okay, we can try.
Bingo!
Not a good bingo.
Okay, so I'm going to deny you magic supernatural, even though you obviously want to say it.
It doesn't count if I imagine it into existence.
No.
Okay, obviously we have a sexual awakening. Yes. Hi, Tycho. Mm-hmm. we have good friendships. I really like their friendship.
Yeah.
We also have hollow friendships, right? Because one of the things that the book is really careful to do is to counterpoint the emotional space that Angela shares with Tycho against her relationships with other boys.
Right. Yeah.
Female writer.
Mm-hmm.
You do some.
I'm going to say perfect date for sex scene.
Yeah.
And I think the only other one that I maybe had was, and again, you can challenge me on this, do we think of Angela as a bit of a manic pixie dream person?
Yeah.
At least filtered through Tycho's perspective.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely.
Yeah. Actually, I did have one other potential one, which was a little bit of ableism abuse in the way that Tycho's family treats him. It's not abuse per se, but just the general disregard for Tycho as a child who maybe needs parenting or support.
So I disagree with that because I do think Mrs. Potter, when she pauses for a second, like there's that lovely scene where she and Tycho have tea and there are moments of connection. But I will give you ableism for the way the community treats Mr. Potter after his epilepsy diagnosis.
Oh, yeah. He becomes this weird pariah where people either they feel sorry for him to the point that they don't treat him like a human being anymore, or they make snide comments behind his back.
It's really awful. It was confronting to me, actually, to see how that plays out.
And yet, not surprising.
No. Folks, if you have any thoughts about Margaret Mahy in general or this book in particular, we would love to hear them, particularly if this is an author you grew up with. We would love to hear about that. So you can find us on the social medias at HKHSPod or on the hashtag HKHSPod. Joe, where do they find you?
I can be reached at Beast on my remote, and that's the letter B.
And I'm at Brenna C. Gray, and that's Gray with an A. And of course, if you want to send in a long-form reflection, this would be a great topic for a mailbag. It's hkhspod@gmail.com. And Joe, obviously New Zealand Month continues next week with Whale Rider. So we'll be reading the book, which is back in the 80s again, and we'll be watching the 2002 film adaptation. I'm excited for this one. I missed the whole Whale Rider phenom when it came out. So I'm excited.
Me too. I only know about it, haven't read it, definitely haven't watched the movie, so it's a good opportunity to catch up.
Yeah, exciting. So yeah, so you know what we're reading and watching, and we're staying in the world of New Zealand, and we're looking for your feedback, and until next time, I will see you on the page.
And I will see you on the screen.